Literature. Pages 138 and 140. Exercises 2 and 3.
Journey to the Center of the Earth. Our compass was no longer a guide. The needle flew from pole to pole with a kind of frenzied impulse. It ran round the dial and spun in all directions. "My uncle," I cried, "we are lost now, utterly lost." "What are you in a fright about now?" was the calm reply. "What is the matter with you?" "The matter? Look at those quaking walls. Look at those shivering rocks. Don't you feel the burning heat? Don't you see how the water boils and bubbles? Are you blind to the dense vapors and steam growing thicker and denser every minute? See this agitated compass needle? It is an earthquake that is threatening us." My uncle calmly shook his head. "Do you think," said he, "an earthquake is coming?" "I do." "Well, I think you are mistaken." "What? Don't you recognize the symptoms?" "Of an earthquake? No. It is an eruption, Axel." "An eruption? Do you mean that we are running up the shaft of a volcano?" "I believe we are," said the professor. "And it is the best thing that could possibly happen to us under our circumstances." The best thing? Was my uncle mad? What did the man mean? And what was the use of saying such things at a time like this? "What?" I shouted. "Are we being taken up in an eruption? Our fate has thrown us here among burning lavas, molten rocks, boiling waters, and all kinds of volcanic matter. We are going to be thrown out, expelled, tossed up, vomited, spit out high into the air, along with fragments of rock and showers of ashes, in the midst of a towering rush of smoke and flames? And it is the best thing that could happen to us?" "Yes," replied the professor, eyeing me over his spectacles. "I don't see any other way of reaching the surface of the earth." I went rapidly over the thousand ideas that passed through my mind. My uncle was right, and never had he seemed to me more daring and more confirmed in his ideas than at this moment when he was calmly contemplating the chances of being shot out of a volcano. In the meantime, up we went. The night passed away in continual ascent. The terrible noise and chaos became more and more intensified. I was stifled and stunned. I thought my last hour was approaching. And yet, imagination is such a strong thing that even in this supreme hour, I was occupied with strange and almost childish speculations. But I was the victim, not the master of my own thoughts. It was very evident that we were being hurried upward upon the crest of a wave of eruption. Beneath our raft was boiling water, and under this, the thicker, slow-moving lava was working its way up in a heated mass, together with fragments of rock, which, when they arrived at the crater, would be dispersed in all directions, high and low. We were imprisoned in the shaft of some volcano. There was no room to doubt that. But this time, instead of an extinct volcano, we were inside one in full activity. I wondered, therefore, where could this mountain be? And in what part of the world we were to be shot out? Towards morning, the ascending movement became accelerated. An enormous force, generated by the extreme pressure of confined vapors, was driving us forward. But to what numberless dangers it exposed us. soon lurid lights began to penetrate the vertical gallery, which widened as we went up. Right and left, I could see huge tunnels, out of which escaped dense smoke. Tongues of fire lapped the walls, which crackled under the intense heat.
"See? See, my uncle?" I cried. "Well, those are only sulfurous flames and vapors, which one must expect to see in an eruption. They are quite natural."
"But we shall be stifled."
"We shall not be stifled at all. The gallery is widening, and if it becomes necessary, we shall abandon the raft and creep into a crevice."
"But the water, the rising water."
"There is no more water, Axel. Only a lava paste, which is bearing us up on its surface to the top of the crater."
The liquid column had indeed disappeared, to give place to dense and still boiling eruptive matter. The temperature was becoming unbearable. A thermometer exposed to this atmosphere would have marked 65 degrees Celsius. The perspiration streamed from my body, but for the rapidity of our ascent, we should have been suffocated. But the professor gave up his idea of abandoning the raft, and it was well he did. However roughly joined together, those planks gave us a firmer support than we could have found anywhere else. About 8 in the morning, a new incident occurred. The upward movement ceased. The raft lay motionless.
"Has the eruption stopped?" I cried.
"Ah," said my uncle, between his clenched teeth. "You are afraid. But don't alarm yourself. This lull cannot last long. It has lasted now 5 minutes, and in a short time we shall resume our journey to the mouth of the crater." "Very good," said my uncle. "In 10 minutes more, we shall be off again."
This was perfectly true. When the 10 minutes were over, we started off again with increased speed. We were obliged to hold fast onto the planks of the raft, not to be thrown off. I have no exact recollection of what took place during the following hours. I have a confused impression left of continuous explosions, loud detonations, a general shaking of the rocks all around us, and of a spinning movement with which our raft was once whirled helplessly round. It rocked upon the lava torrent, amidst a dense fall of ashes. Snorting flames darted their fiery tongues at us. There were wild, fierce puffs of stormy wind from below, resembling the blasts of vast furnaces, blowing all at one time. And I caught a glimpse of the figure of Hans, lighted up by the fire. And all the feeling I had left was just what I imagine must be the feeling of an unhappy criminal doomed to be blown away alive from the mouth of a cannon.